Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with regional and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
Stephen Diggs is a psychologist in Chico specializing in personality disorder treatment. He and one of his patients, Rebecca Miller, have written a book together about her therapy. It's a very personal memoir about Rebecca's severe childhood trauma. Dr. Diggs himself spent most of his life with a painful personality disorder, and he's happy that the particular therapy that he uses is helping people heal. Rebecca Miller experienced 30 foster care homes, 12 psychiatric hospitals, years of drug rehab and therapists through her 20-year struggle with borderline personality disorder. Then she met Dr. Stephen Diggs. The book they co-wrote is Secondhand Girl, From Foster Care to Borderline Personality Disorder to Peace. Stephen, Rebecca, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Now, I think we should probably say from the start what you have at the front of your book about the fact that this is therapy now. What do you want listeners to know about your book and your advice?
What we want them to know, well, first of all, Rebecca and I are really committed to the idea that people can heal borderline personality disorder. And if you live in the world we live in, you find out, tragically, that many people are told that's not possible. And sadly, many people are told that by their therapists and by the training they get at universities. And so that's number one.
Well, I was thinking the fact that you say that this is not a replacement for direct expert assistance. This is not a replacement for
experts. The book, no.
Yeah. Or services of a competent professional. So you're offering your advice, but you're not saying this is official.
Well, Rebecca says many times in this book that to get well, you need to form a relationship with someone you trust.
And you That's a key word right there. You said it.
And you can't form a relationship with that book. You need a human being.
That's a good way to put it. You know, I also noticed, Doctor, you get credit for part of the design of the cover. Isn't that true?
Yes, I did design the cover.
And every time I picked up this book, there's this young girl staring at me, and I stared back at her. How did you come up with this wonderful design for the cover? Rebecca?
Well, it's the story of when you left for foster care. Would you tell us that story? Don't want to tell it too much? Should I tell it? Okay. Well, this is the story of Rebecca sadly being sent off to foster care at 7 years old, I think you were, at seven, and the family had organized around the idea that they needed to take care of her mother, and taking care of her mother meant sending her away, and no one was thinking about the care of this little seven-year-old girl, so she is driving away, looking out the back window at her mother, and she's heading into a life that will destroy her in many ways, and no one is there saying, you matter, you come first, we're going to take care of you.
Do you know, when I look at the face of this little girl on the cover, it almost makes me cry to see her expression and know what she's feeling, even before I start reading the story. Well, you wrote this book for, you say, three groups. Who do you hope will read your book and Rebecca's book?
Well, when we wrote it, we had three in mind. We had the therapists who are going to hopefully help borderlines, and then we had the patients, and then the family of the patients.
So you have these three groups, and I think I found it really helpful, and I think people will. Now, you do say, I even asked a friend of mine who's a psychotherapist something that is borne out in your book, because I found, too, so much truth in your book, just on my limited experience. For example, I asked a friend who's a psychotherapist, And I said, do you treat borderline personality disorders? She said, no, I declined to treat them. And you say that in the preface of your book. Yes. You say that therapists avoid these cases.
I went through 15 therapists before finding Diggs. Yeah. So they don't know what they're doing, and they don't know. They're not trained to train them. It's really sad. It was really hard.
That's why I'm sure you both, and I do too, hope that therapists and students will read this book. Mm-hmm. Now, I might mention to listeners, too, that you just referred to this gentleman sitting next to you as Diggs.
Yes.
So that's what you call him. And if you don't mind, I'll call you Steve.
You can call me whatever you like, but amongst the people who know me since I was in junior high school, Diggs is my name. So that's kind of what I respond to. But you call me Steve. It's fine.
All right. Now, at one point, Steve, you say, this book is Rebecca doing her job. What? Why did you say this book is her, she's doing her job? What was her job?
Well, the widespread belief that borderline cannot be healed means that hundreds of thousands of people are suffering with no hope. It's horrible. It's horrible, the number of people who have borderline personality and their families who are convinced there's nothing you can do. And we get plenty of blowback for this book. We get people who
already,
yeah, people wow. who, well, it can't be healed. You're right.
Rebecca's nodding. Yeah. Silently nodding. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you say, she has taught me so much.
Yes.
Now, I think that would be a surprise because people in your position, in MDs, they're supposed to have all the answers. How can she teach you so much?
Well, one of the things I say is, I say two things about that. The first thing is that I am an expert in psychology. You are an expert on yourself. When we put those two expertises together, then you can get well. But I should not pretend to be an expert on you. I should actively be someone who is learning about you step by step by step through the process, but I shouldn't pretend I know more about that. Plus, I've trained thousands of therapists through the years, maybe more than that. I don't know. A lot of therapists. I've spent my life with therapists. I've done therapy on them. I've trained them. They are not more well than their patients. And some are a little more well than some of their patients. Some are less well than some of their patients. But this idea that therapists have it together is a real disservice to the therapists themselves and to the patients. Because if you walk into a relationship with the attitude that I know everything, you're impenetrable. You cannot be penetrated. And the relationship of safety and trust that develops because that penetrability is there. And borderline people are relationship-seeking by nature, and they seek depth in relationship. This is their temperament, typically, not always. But if a borderline reaches out to you and wants to connect to you, they have to be able to penetrate you. They have to be able to get through the external layer of who you are. And if you are certain you know everything, and if you're certain you're entirely well, you are impenetrable. And so this is a huge frustration for Rebecca and past therapists, but also other borderline people who come and say, wow. And, you know, I have a team of therapists that I have trained, and they're better at this therapy than I am, some of them, because I have still my struggles that are pretty gone right now, but I still have some weaknesses from my own personality disorder. I got well later in life, so I didn't get as much all the fullness of recovery that we want our patients to have. But when they come in, they are seeking that connection. They're seeking that penetration, and they can't get well otherwise. And they'll say, this therapy isn't like the other therapy I've had. And we go, I'm good. Did the other therapy work? No. How, this is working. Why is that? Well, because you're looking at what's right about me, and you're open, and you're admitting when you're wrong, and you're admitting when you don't know something, and it's like we're having a real relationship. Am I right, Rebecca?
Absolutely. Authenticity is key.
Yes.
This is, I have two guests. Just now talking was a Chico therapist, Dr. Stephen Diggs, and his patient, Rebecca Miller, who have co-authored a book. You know, some people confuse bipolar with borderline personality disorder. So how do we know what borderline personality disorder is?
Bipolar is a disease of the brain in which the brain goes through fluctuations of peaks of activity through certain neurochemicals in parts of the brain, and then a lowering of that activity in certain parts of the brain and in the neurochemicals that happen. It is a biological condition. Borderline personality is a condition of the experience and memories of a human being as they're growing up in a traumatic situation, in which those experiences and memories create within them a personality that functions in dysfunctional ways. It doesn't work as expected. And when the trauma is absorbed, it is absorbed primarily in the right brain, and the right brain is commonly thought of now as the site of the unconscious, what Freud used to call the unconscious. So it's unconscious, and the right brain is emotional, it's primitive, it doesn't live in linear time, it's more atemporal. A wonderful book about that is My Stroke of Insight, tells you a lot about what the right brain is like. And the left brain is the logical and rational. If you have a personality disorder, your right brain dominates your activity and thinking, and your left brain is weaker and subservient to that. And so what most people want and expect is for someone to be rational. And so
that sounds like you, doctor. That's how you describe yourself.
As rational? Yes. Well, I'll talk about that in a minute. I will. So the personality disorder that we're talking about has somebody acting that's irrational. And if you ask them, why do you do this? They go, I don't know. Why don't you stop? I can't. And then people say, well, you could if you tried harder. You can't, because your experience of trauma lives in this right brain, and it must act in certain ways that are irrational. So when someone comes to therapy, if you expect them to be rational, you can't help them, and you'll destroy the possibility of trust, and you're passing up the opportunity to connect to their right brain through a trusting relationship, which will actually change their brain into a better functioning personality.
Now, Rebecca, I have a question for you. You've been through 15 therapists. Mm-hmm. How did you even hear about this doctor who has such a different approach?
So I was pretty desperate to get better. I was suffering quite a bit with the borderline. And when one of my trips to the mental hospital, I was having a meltdown, and a group of people walked in, and a social worker and a few other people that don't normally frequent the floor there. And they had asked me if I wanted to see a new doctor. And of course I was like, no, it's not going to help me. So even though I wanted help, I felt pretty helpless.
Well, after 15 therapists, right. Yeah, we could understand that.
Right. And so she insisted on part of my exit treatment that I see this doctor, and it was part of the treatment plan. And basically she said, I'd like to be a fly on the wall when you see this doctor because he's that good. And I said, we'll see.
Because he's that good.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she was very complimentary. And so you said, okay, I'll go see this Dr. Stephen Diggs.
Mm-hmm.
And you walk in the door and you think, oh, this is wonderful. He's a great guy. Is that how it happened?
No. I didn't trust him. I didn't trust anybody, really. But he didn't deny that. He was very open and very authentic, you know, which we crave. And after time, we just kind of grew to trust each other. And that's how the therapy started working.
This is the memoirist Rebecca Miller telling us about her experiences with borderline personality disorder. And the title of the book is Secondhand Girl. We'll be back after a break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. I'm Nancy Wigman. This is Nancy's Bookshelf. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm back with my guest, Dr. Stephen Diggs, and his patient, Rebecca Miller, co-authors of a book about borderline personality disorders.
Borderline people are known to have a lot of suicidal ideation and gestures without what is called lethal intent. And the suicidal feelings of someone who is borderline must be taken very seriously because sometimes there is lethal intent. But you have to know the difference between the non-lethal feelings that are coming out and the lethal attitude that says, I'm going to complete this suicide. The non-lethal suicidal feelings are the feelings of the child who was in a traumatic environment and was lying alone in her crib or in her bed at 2 or 3 or 4 years old, and no one was there. They were abandoned. They needed to be held and rocked, and they're sitting there in sobbing, and they're thinking, I must be dying. I must be dying. And so this kind of suicidality, the way we see it at NYSA Therapy, that's my organization with 4 other therapists, the way we see it is that's the child saying, someone needs to come and help me. So when someone has suicidal feelings that aren't lethal, and we assess that very carefully, then we will say, okay, I need to do something to make them feel I'm showing up to take care of them, because it's a desperate cry for help and the need for attention. And when people say, oh yeah, borderline people just do that to get attention, we say, well, yeah, that's exactly it. So pay them some attention.
We want the pain to die.
Well, do you know...
Did you hear that?
Yeah, you want the pain to die. Mm-hmm. Yes, not yourself, really, but the pain. And I know this person that I happen to know did attempt suicide. It was Christmas Eve, on medications, took alcohol and took overdose of pills. And she just wanted the pain to end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what you're saying, Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
You just want it to be over. And so I'm reading your book and I thought, my gosh, Rebecca's married and her husband is there with her, mm-hmm, and he's still there. So I was thinking, maybe he deserves to be nominated for sainthood, Rebecca.
Right. No, he's pretty wonderful. He's got his own issues, but we all have issues. But he's stuck with me throughout all of this, throughout, you know, all the years, 25 years today, actually.
How did you meet this wonderful guy?
High school.
High school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And you describe him as being kind of a cowboy, would you say?
He's a country boy, definitely a country boy, yeah.
And you also had a couple of other, didn't happen to be humans, that you really relied on. And one of them was named Sweet Pea.
Mm-hmm. My dog, yeah.
and one of them was named Blue Jeans. And doctor, you, I think it was you who said, dogs are great, but horses are even better. And you had one of each.
Yeah, I did.
You
I
had was a horse pretty, and a dog.
I was pretty fortunate to be in foster care and have a horse in foster care. That's how I ended up in the country. So, yeah, it was pretty great.
Well, those people who love dogs understand how your dog could be there. And you even say that one of the hardest days in your life was when you had to give up your dog.
Mm-hmm.
And why did you give up your dog?
I didn't have a choice. The foster parents I was living with had been somewhat okay with the dog, but then she was causing issues, and I just showed up one day, and they're like, we had to get rid of her. And so they took her.
They didn't ask you. They just got rid of your dog that you was the love of your life.
Right. Yeah. I was very attached. Yeah.
Well, speaking of foster parents, there was, I think the kind of the turning point came when you said, okay, I'm out of here, was a foster mother named Sherry.
Right.
And what was your problem with Sherry?
She was probably, in my opinion, an undiagnosed borderline. Although she was very mean, mean-spirited, and not all borderlines are mean-spirited. But she was a bully. She was very controlling. One time, she had lost a pen, and the...
Now, this is just a pen, like P-E-N,
yes,
like so you write with.
A simple pen.
Yeah.
And she accused me of taking it, and because I had found it, and I brought it to her, and she says, well, you took it. And I said, no, well, I didn't take it. And the other foster girl that was living in the home with us said, okay, actually, I took it. And she jumped on her and tackled her to the ground because I think she was ashamed and embarrassed that she had accused me and it was really this girl. So that's just one example of the kind of abuse that she did.
And it's kind of astounding that you're still a teenager and you'd already been in 30 different foster homes.
Right. From 7 to 17, I was in 30, not counting respite homes. So it was 30 to 40, yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to imagine. My guests are Rebecca Miller, and this is her memoir. And along with her story, Dr. Stephen Diggs, a Chico therapist. The title of the book, Secondhand Girl, From Foster Care to Borderline Personality to Peace. So along the way, Rebecca, you're telling your story. And it's like now, if you have something to add, doctor, you add that. You do that in your book. Rebecca, you start telling your story. And then Dr. Diggs comes in and comments and enlightens us. And there were so many places in your book where I thought, oh, golly, that is so well written. And you abused alcohol, for example. And it would be easy for people to say, oh, she was an alcoholic. But why did you drink alcohol?
I had a lot of addictions when I was an active borderline. It was just to escape. Pretty much anything I could do or I could think of to feel better, I would do it.
Well, your husband thinks that, doctor, you should be curing her alcoholism. What are you doing? Why aren't you addressing her alcoholism? Well, you have a paragraph in your book about when Raj comes in and Raj is mad at you, doctor. Why don't you read that section of your book?
After I'd been working for about a year with Rebecca, Raj came in and asked what I was doing about her alcohol abuse. He told me he was quite scared because she was drinking heavily. When I told him that we almost never talked about it, he became outraged. I explained that we were healing the underlying cause of her substance abuse, her childhood trauma. Then I turned to her and said, you know you need to quit drinking, don't you, Rebecca? And she said yes. Then I asked, is there anything I could say that would help you to quit right now? Rebecca said, if you say anything, it would just make me mad because it would mean you have no clue that I want to die every day. Raj was silent. Then, somewhat heavily, he said that he understood that we were on the right track.
That was really nice of Raj to say that. Mm-hmm. This was Chico therapist Dr. Stephen Diggs reading from a book he co-wrote with a patient, Rebecca Miller, and the title is Secondhand Girl. So Raj comes in really mad at you, and he leaves, oh, I understand.
Well, he wanted Rebecca and me to be rational.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And that doesn't work with borderline. What works is a connection that elicits trust. That's what heals. And you've got to dive into that all the way, or borderline people who have very good reasons not to trust will never let go.
So you have some good advice for therapist doctor in your book, and I think you'd probably like to read that advice that you have.
Oh, yeah. This is actually Rebecca wrote this. This is Rebecca's. So here's what Rebecca says. Mental health professionals, please listen. If your main focus is on the behaviors of borderline personality disorder, such as cutting, substance abuse, rage, etc., you are failing us. Symptomatic behavior is not where therapy should be focused. Symptom-focused therapy never worked for me. I've never spoken personally to a borderline person who was satisfied with this type of treatment. Your main focus should be on changing the defensive mechanisms inside the personality.
So that's Rebecca's advice to mental health professionals, because you speak from experience. Well, since the doctor read that, I do have a section Rebecca, that you say why you cut yourself. And I thought maybe you might like to read why you did that. And or just why you would overdose on pills. Why don't you read us the section in your book where you talk about your worst point.
At my worst point, I remember being done with everything. Life had become too much, and following the example set by my mother, I swallowed a handful of pills. I seriously wanted to die and be done with the pain. I was tired of fighting, and I felt like my family would be better off without me. I had become a burden and decided that no one would miss me once I was gone. Raj saved my life that night by figuring out what I had done and calling 911.
And again, Raj is your husband of many years.
Yes.
And he saved your life. Now, mm-hmm. that's a big deal, to give somebody credit for saving your life. And you're reading from your memoir, Secondhand Girl. And it helps us to understand what you were going through. And at a young age, you lost a lot of jobs. How many jobs did you lose?
10.
10 jobs. Well, you were still, before you were 24, I think it was?
I think it was between 17 and 22. I had lost 10 jobs.
10
Fired.
Jobs. Fired. Well, I think your employer wouldn't understand your borderline personality disorder. So, Rebecca, we're not going to put up with that.
Right.
What was their main objection?
Oh, different reasons. I would rage if I felt like something was unfair or mistreated in any way. It was very hard to manage that.
So you got fired from 10 jobs mm-hmm. before you were even 24 years old, you say about 22 years old. Mm-hmm. And you say even when you go in to see a therapist or a doctor, because you actually went to see a psychiatrist, and you were young enough that, I don't know if I want to use the word naive, but you say now, I should have asked more questions.
Yeah.
And I thought back when I read that I had an aunt, my grandfather was an MD, and my aunt probably would have been one, but this was back in the day. Her husband had PTSD from being a World War II veteran. She goes in to the psychiatrist, he diagnoses PTSD, he prescribes medication. But my aunt said, what's the plan for getting him off this medication? And I don't think many people ask the doctor, what's the plan for getting off these medications? So what about when you you went into this, well, when you saw the psychiatrist, you didn't actually see the psychiatrist himself. You were assigned, who did you see?
We saw a physician's assistant underneath the psychiatrist. So we were very wary of that. My husband was very wary of that because I felt like I was such a emotional case that I needed, you know, somebody who really knew what they were doing. But I was naive and I didn't really know what questions to ask.
So you have a little section in your book, and would you read that section about the questions you wish you had asked?
I should have asked more questions, but I didn't know the right ones to ask, such as, can I drive on these medications? What should I expect to feel for the first few days? How long until it wears off, or how long until my body adjusts to it? Can I drink alcohol while on them? I wish I had asked about all these things that weren't explained to me from the beginning.
This is Rebecca Miller reading from her memoir, Secondhand Girl, From Foster Care to Borderline Personality to Peace. Rebecca Miller and her therapist, Chico's Dr. Stephen Diggs, are my guests today. After a break, we'll be back to continue the story of her borderline personality disorder. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wiegman. I'm Nancy Wiegman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My guests today are Rebecca Miller and Dr. Stephen Diggs, co-authors of Secondhand Girl. Now, we've been rather critical, this psychiatrist and his physician's assistant put you on a lot, I was astounded, a lot of medications. How many medications were you taking?
They started me out on 3, which we were skeptical of, and by the end of it, 14 medications a day.
14 a day?
Mm-hmm.
That's just hard to believe. And so you are on all these medications, and you are suffering the consequences of them.
Right.
What was the effect of all these medications, Rebecca?
I wasn't in my right mind at all. On top of the borderline, it made everything a million times worse.
So instead of helping, they were making it worse.
Right.
But there are heroes in your book, Rebecca, and one of them is named Laura Miller. Why do you think I would consider Laura Miller? She's the one who said, Dr. Dix can help you.
Oh, right. She was a social worker that said he could help me. Yeah, I owe her a lot.
So you have gratitude toward a nurse who told you the truth?
Yes.
She said, you can't rely on doctors and medications. You have to change from within.
She did. She pulled me aside and had a heart-to-heart with me, and it stuck with me all these years, even though I wasn't in my right mind at the time. I did eventually take her advice, and with the help of Dr. Diggs, and got well. So,
but
yeah.
It wasn't easy getting off all those medications.
No, not at all.
Oh, gosh. You describe what you went through trying to get off these medications. So you say in your book that you have the gratitude toward that nurse who told you the truth, that you can't rely on doctors and medications when you have to change your from within.
Right.
And so you also praise part of Enloe Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Why were you grateful to them at Enloe?
Mostly for that nurse and for the social worker there. So, And, you know, they kept me stable when I wasn't well, so.
Well, I remember a nurse, when doctors prescribed some medication and they didn't mention any side effects, and a nurse kind of took me aside and said, your husband's going to suffer these consequences, but ask the doctor for a prescription for. Mm-hmm. And it was the nurse who was a caring person that, and I really appreciated her stepping in and doing that. Doctor?
Yeah. Earlier in my career, when I was younger and had more energy, I did work very closely with INLO. And I would do trainings and consultations. And there was a time where we had a very solid relationship of them diagnosing borderline and not calling it bipolar, because mm-hmm. that's the mistake that happened to Rebecca when she worked with her psychiatrist. I mean, it's a very easy differential diagnosis to tell the difference between borderline and bipolar, but they don't do it. And yet INLO...
So they treat the patient as if they had bipolar.
But INLO was very progressive, and they were wonderful, and they said, let's learn about borderline. Let's learn about the difference. And they got very good at the differential diagnosis, and they would tell people, you know, we're going to stabilize you on meds because you've been dangerous, usually suicidal, but then you need to go to NYSA therapy and Diggs and the crew and address your borderline personality. And so those were good years. And INLO was very, very good to work with back in those days.
Well, I'm glad that you can pass on that compliment to INLO. Now, if we're kind of being critical of a psychiatrist and their medication, why are they like that, doctor? You address that in your book. So, because we're wondering, well, why do psychiatrists want to medicate the person? Why don't you read that section
from
your book?
Why are they like this? Now, this is only my personal perception, but I was there when the change came about, and here's my answer. Just mine, but this is my answer. A long time ago, psychiatrists used to do therapy. Then, in the 1980s, it became hard to make the kind of income doing therapy that physicians made in other specialties. Master's-level therapists were offering lower prices, and psychiatrists wanted to make much more money as other doctors. Understandable. I don't hold that against them. Also, medications were starting to improve, starting with the arrival of Prozac. Finally, insurance companies figured out that it was much cheaper to have psychiatrists provide medication rather than therapy and began to encourage them to do this. These three things combined to move psychiatry almost entirely into a medication-providing occupation.
This is Chico therapist Dr. Stephen Diggs reading from a book he co-authored with his patient Rebecca Miller. The title of the book, Secondhand Girl, From Foster Care to Borderline Personality to Peace. And that's nice. Peace. You ended up, so you find that that's your experience now, is one of peace.
Yes.
And it must have been hard. I mean, most women, children are not exactly peaceful raising children, but you made it through that. And how have your children reacted to what you went through, Rebecca, if I may ask?
Well, they're pretty well adjusted. Believe it or not, I was pretty sick raising them. I didn't want to be, but I was.
Because you wanted a family. And when you wanted to get married, you wanted to have a family.
Yes. I wanted my own family, yes. They're pretty well adjusted, though, I would say, honestly.
Well, you you were on a lot of medications, and when you told your doctors, I want to get off these medications,
mm-hmm.
you told them, and what did they say, Rebecca?
They weren't having it. They did not want me to get off these medications.
Well, people might wonder, well, you were addicted to drugs, but what's the difference between prescription over medication and, say, drug addiction?
Well, I wasn't really addicted to drugs. I was addicted to whatever made me feel better, alcohol, self-harming, whatever it took to feel a little bit better, I would do it. Street drugs weren't my thing. So, yeah.
Well, I think you understand, too, that you don't judge people for how they cope.
No,
they
I don't.
Cope however they can. Now, doctor, you call yourself an ambassador.
Yes.
In what way are you an ambassador?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, I spent most of my life with severe personality disorder. And people sometimes say, well, how can that be true if you're a doctor? And I like to point out that there's a whole lot of politicians and celebrities in our world that are very successful, and they clearly have severe personality disorders. So a severe personality disorder does not prevent you from being occupationally successful.
Well, here's an example. Carrie Fisher.
Yes.
She wrote a book about that.
There you go.
And she was very successful as an actress and Star Wars princess, but she wrote a book about what she went
exactly.
through.
Right. So what suffers is occupational life often suffers, but not always. But what does suffer is the personal, intimate life of the individual. It becomes very difficult to have a close and intimate relationship. So anyway, I spent my life with this personality disorder, and I went to a lot of therapy that did not work. And my therapists were well-meaning and good people, and I think about them with affection, but they didn't know what they were doing. And so at a certain point, I just decided, you know, what have I got to lose by trying something new and different? And the way I approached it was to think, what did I want my therapist to do for me when I was struggling with personality disorder so severely? So that's why I'm an ambassador. I'm here to say I have suffered severely with personality disorder. I know what was in me and what I wanted and needed from my therapist, and I'm going to tell you, the therapists I train and talk to, this is what your patients want. This is what they want. So, for example, I never held it against my therapist if they made a mistake, if they were trying to reach me and reach my problem. I held it against them if they wouldn't try anything, if they just sat there and did little or nothing, afraid of making a mistake or afraid of being sued or afraid of something, if they sat there in fear. And so that's the main message. Do not sit there and do little or nothing. Do something real and active and authentic to connect to this human being.
This is Dr. Stephen Diggs telling us that he had firsthand experience of what he was helping his patients with. And so, doctor, nobody's perfect, but Raj seems like, well, he's a perfect husband. Is he perfect? Well, maybe now. But why do you think your husband, what did he need therapy for? He was there standing by you through thick and thin, everything you went through. So did Raj have a problem?
As sick as I was, it takes somebody who has their own issues to choose somebody as messed up as I was, honestly. He had his own issues, but, I mean, overall, he is loyal. He's been loyal throughout all these years. He's helped me, and he never gave up on us.
And that's why, as we're reading the story, we think, yeah, Raj is really a hero.
Yes.
We should nominate him for sainthood. But he was dealing with something, too, that I think we recognize these days sometimes people are narcissists. Who would like to comment on that?
Well,
Rebecca's
yes.
pointing you, doctor.
Well, yes. And I think there's a couple of things I would say about that. First is, it's not fashionable anymore to trash borderline people, thank heaven, because for a whole lot of years, you know, oh, I would never treat borderline. Oh, she's so borderline. And borderline people just got trashed, and that's not fashionable. And now it has become fashionable to trash people with narcissistic features. That's horrible. All of these conditions, all of these personality problems are painful, and they're not enjoyable, and no one selects them, and no one wants them. So Raj, who had narcissistic features, had to learn how to be more open and empathetic to the struggles that his wife was going through, which is something he volunteered to do and did with very good success. And this is a very interesting fact. People who are more rigid and contained like and need borderline people because borderline people will make them feel more alive.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned that just now that Raj developed empathy.
Yes.
And for you, Rebecca, what did you develop? Trust?
Trust.
So for you, that was what was important. So Raj develops empathy, understanding what you're going through, and you learn to trust. With the help of, it took you a long time to find a therapist who understood, as Dr. Diggs has described.
And not only understand, but be honest, truly honest, when I was failing her.
Uh-huh.
So there were times when Rebecca would come in and my personality disorder is one of wearing a lot of masks, being kind of a masked person, that I am a nice guy, but you never get to know who I really am, you know? There was this New Yorker cartoon I saw years ago where these two women are talking at a party and they're looking at this guy and they're saying, oh, he's a really nice guy once you get past his warmth. Get it? Well, that's me. And so I would come in, I'd be the nice therapist, and how are you? And I've got my little therapist mask on. And as Rebecca said, the borderline craving of authenticity is essential to them. It's water. Without it, they die. And so she would say, Diggs, please don't do this today. I really need you. And instead of saying, well, I wonder why you're having this transference towards me, I would say, okay, what am I doing? She goes, you're doing your therapy thing. It's like you're not even here. You're just acting like a therapist instead of being my therapist. And then I thought, what would I need from my therapist if I was in this situation? I listened and said, okay, well, give me a few minutes and I'll try and get there. Can you help me? I mean, and she would help.
And here's the therapist asking his patients, can you help me? And yes, she did.
And she would help me get to an authentic place, and then I would feel it and say, oh, I didn't even know how phony I was being. Okay, what's going on? And then I would be me, and then I would be authentic, and then she could let her self trust me at that point.
In fact, at one point you say, I love her dearly.
Yes. I was at a training the other day, and someone, and I said something about that, and someone said, is it ethical to tell your patient that you love them? And my answer was, only if it's true. That's a true feeling. Why are people terrified of love? I don't know. But if I have a patient that I don't love, I wouldn't say that in a phony, manipulative way. But if I have a patient that I do love, Rebecca, why would that not be true between us?
Well, there's a doctor at Enloe, an emergency doctor, who wrote a book, and that was the title of his book, Love More.
There you go. There you go.
Well, are there any parting comments that you would like to leave us with before we say goodbye?
What to say? I love Rebecca.
I love you too.
And that doesn't mean we can't hold our states as therapist and patient. We know who we are at that level, but we know something real has happened between us. And without that reality, she was not going to trust.
Well, you mentioned that you wrote your book for three different people, for people who actually have borderline personality disorder, the family members of these people, and the mental health professionals and students. So I totally agree with it's everything in your book, really. I agree with you from my limited experience. And I do agree with you that I think this would be a really good idea for those three groups and others to read your book.
We haven't sold a lot of copies yet, but the people who read it, especially borderline people, just feel so seen and understood and validated. Right, Rebecca? That's what you're hearing?
That's what I'm hearing as well, yeah.
Yeah, because Rebecca, even you didn't believe when they first told you, when somebody said you have borderline personality disorder, you didn't believe it. No, I've got bipolar, I've got PTSD,
right.
I've got OCD. I don't have borderline personality right. disorder. So even you.
In the very beginning, yes, I believed.
Misdiagnosed yourself.
I did. It was easier to believe that I had bipolar than a horrible personality disorder that I didn't feel could be fixed. But borderline can be healed.
Well, thank you, Rebecca, for being bold and telling your story and being public about it. Of course, some of the names we changed, but thank you for telling your story.
Oh, thank you so much.
And thank you, Dr. Stephen Diggs, for enlightening us about the role of a therapist in all of this.
You are very welcome.
Again, my guests have been Rebecca Miller, Dr. Stephen Diggs. The title of their book, Secondhand Girl, From Foster Care to Borderline Personality to Peace. And next we have a segment we call The Writer's Room, and it features writers from around the North State.
Sacramento Valley Summer and Indiana Girls' Perceptions. It's brazen, this clarity of light, this immediacy of objects, this transparency of air. Here, no gauze of moisture softens or protects the waking eye, the guarded heart, from what will not be denied. No supple green lies between us and bone of rock, of limb. Only the meadowlark's song arcs, supple as spring leaves across the sun-struck sky. The sweet scent of dried grasses whispering. Amy Gaffney.
For more information on the writers you've just heard, go to mynspr.org and click on the poetry link.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.